Welcome to episode 146 of Practical Defense. Cell phones. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I am your host, Alex Haddix. We have another great episode for you this week, albeit a little bit late. Our subject is cell phones and how they can be used as a defensive tool. Now, back in episode 142, we had a nice chat with Julie Green about her book, Defy the Bad Guy, and during that discussion, she brought up how cell phones can be used to help keep you a bit safer. In response to that episode, we received a fantastic and lengthy email from a law enforcement officer, David, in Texas. So what I'm going to do this episode is read and discuss David's email. Julie Green also sent in some of her comments as well. But before we get into the email, I want to remind everyone about the Masoud Ayoub seminar I'm hosting at the end of January. It's now October, so there's still time, but in our busy lives, we often put things off and then it's too late. You do not want to let that happen with a seminar. This two-day, 20-hour course will help keep you out of jail. The course title is Armed Citizens Rules of Engagement, but what it covers is the appropriate use of lethal force. You're going to get the hard, nitty-gritty details directly from one of the nation's experts in this specific area. This course is for anyone who intends to defend himself or herself against an aggressor. It includes the private citizen, security, and law enforcement. Whether you carry a defensive tool, a firearm, or just your hands, you can and will learn something. I always stress that even if you're 100% in the right, you can still be arrested if you do or say the wrong thing. Heck, I even have that statement on the front page of my website. This course helps you avoid the pitfalls before, during, and in the aftermath of a criminal encounter. It's a rare treat that Moss has agreed to come out to California to teach. You should not pass up this opportunity. You can find the sign-up page on my website at alexhaddix.com/mag20. That's M-A-G-2-0. I've started to get some registrations, but there are still plenty of seats available. Okay, with that, let's hear from David with his comments on cell phone usage.
When hurricanes strike, people lose belongings, their homes, hope. This hurricane season is predicted to be severe. American Red Cross volunteers stand ready. You can help. Your $50 click on redcross.org can feed and shelter a child for a day. Text Red Cross to 90999 to give $10. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS and your $25 gift can make sure someone won't go hungry for the day. Every single donation brings hope. Text message and data rates may apply.
Welcome back. So, David from Texas writes, Alex, I'm a devoted listener of your podcast. I find myself writing to you for the second time in the past month or two. I wanted to add my two cents following your interview with Julie Green in episode 142, specifically the issue of cell phones. I'm a career law enforcement officer. I'm also older than the age 39, so to me, cell phones are not the default means of contacting someone else. They are more like a very handy secondary option. But I grew up with landlines, and I admit I have a bias towards their reliability and clarity. Still, I believe there are some issues regarding the proliferation of cell phones that need to be addressed. You and Ms. Green advocate the keeping of a cell phone next to the bed at night to enable reliable, fast communication in the case of emergency. I agree with that. But I think it's a mistake to discount the use of the home telephone line completely. Consider, if the phone line is in order, and you have even a cheap phone plugged into the wall, your home phone may work even if other utilities are disconnected. They aren't affected by cell phone towers being knocked over or overloaded in times of crisis. Now, I agree with David's statement here. However, I think he missed my point about keeping a cell phone next to your bed. I completely agree that you should use a landline as your primary device to call 911. In most cases, your address will display on the 911 operator screen so they can dispatch the teams to your home quicker and more accurately. With a cell phone, they need to rely on you telling them where you are. But here's the problem with landlines. They can be cut, and are cut sometimes before a home invasion. Often the power lines are cut as well. As I discussed in my home security series of episodes, older homes have the circuit breaker panels on the outside of the home. So the criminals don't even need to enter the home or bring cable cutters to cut the power. Cutting the power can disable some old or poorly designed alarm systems without battery backups, and it will disable all wireless landline phones in the home. Few people these days have the old wired landline phones. Everyone has portable phones, and they go dead when the power does. Secondly, often when a home invader makes his way into the home, he'll lift the first receiver he sees off the hook. Doing this eliminates your ability to make an outgoing call. So yes, the landline phone should be your first option. However, there is a good chance it may be disabled, so you need that cell phone at your bedside as a backup. Okay, more from David. In major cities, it's possible that a 911 call center can get a reasonably close fix on your location if you call from a cell phone. They do this by triangulating a signal strength from various cell towers in your area. But this is inexact and may only give the police a rough area to canvas, and it relies upon the translation into latitude and longitude, and then to an area on an actual street map. In contrast to this, in almost every area in the country, the moment a call goes through to 911 from a landline phone, the exact address at the location pops up on a screen without you even having to say anything. Cell phones are handy, but they are more fragile than people realize. If your battery dies, or you drop the phone and it comes apart, or if you plain misplace it, what other option do you have for calling anybody if no landline phone is available? Now here I'm going to shift the order of David's email around a bit to put some points together that I want to make. He continues. Often when I reach this point in dialogue with someone, usually from Generation Y, I begin to see the pushback against the idea of landline phones. Yes, it's an extra bill each month if you sign up for services, and you can't take text or take pictures or whatever you like to do with your cell phone. But did you know that most phone companies will still allow emergency calls to 911 to go through even if there is no service contract in effect for that address? You should check with your local provider to be sure about this, but as a redundant means of calling help, I really can't see the downside of keeping a landline phone by your bed, especially if you don't even need to pay for the service to get it. So David's point here is that even if you don't have a service contract, all you need is a dial tone and you can still reach 911. It is an excellent point. Now, many of the younger generation are not installing standard landline phones in their homes or apartments. Rather, they're going exclusively with cell phones and are getting their internet connections via cable modem. The landline is an extra cost, and most of the younger generation never receive calls on their landlines anyway. Everyone just calls them on their mobile. Also, if they do get a terrestrial phone number, it's often a voice over IP or VoIP connection with flat rates that are the most popular. Heck, in my neighborhood, AT&T is offering VoIP over their DSL and fiber connections for flat rates. From a security standpoint, that is risky. The 911 services for VoIP can be spotty, and there have even been several lawsuits filed because of flawed or unavailable 911 service. Also, the responsibility of entering the 911 response information is up to the consumer. So if you put the wrong information into the system, the operator may send the response team to the wrong address. Since your VoIP moves with you, it is imperative that you update your emergency services address the moment you move your furniture in. A friend of mine moved from New York to Los Angeles, and he did not update his 911 information for a few months. He just didn't think about it and was horrified when he realized his error. So if you have a VoIP phone, check your emergency services address. VoIP phones can also put emergency services at the reliability of your ISP. My internet service is reliable. It's really pretty good. But my phone service is outstanding. I'd much rather put my trust in a landline over VoIP. Now, next, David brings up an excellent point that I hadn't considered. He writes, to expand on this last point, a great deal of 911 calls for help involve not strangers breaking into a home, but boyfriends or husbands or family members assaulting the callers. And it is very common for those actors to take the phones away from their victims, often before a call for help can be completed, and frequently to break the phones in the process. I've seen this more times than I can count. If you're at home when this happens, but you have no landline phone to run to, what will be your next course of action to call for help? Remember that even if the cell call begins to go through, unless you're able to blurt out your address first thing, the police will likely be unsure exactly where the call came from. And if the dispatchers can't call you back, they won't be able to ask you for any follow-up questions. This is an excellent point. I remember a statistic from years ago, and I don't know if it's still accurate, but 80% of murders are by spouses or boyfriends or girlfriends. That's why when a woman's murdered, the first thing investigators do is interview the boyfriend or husband. That is why if someone close to you is murdered, do not speak to the police without an attorney present. I don't care how innocent you are suspect number one until proven otherwise. As I always say, shut up and let your attorney represent you. David continues. Since I'm on this topic now, I have a few other points I'd like to make, and I'm aiming these comments primarily at the females in your listening audience that Ms. Green was talking to. Remember, I am basing these comments on my own observations over the past several years. 1. Although it may be true that a cell phone in your hand could be a useful force multiplier, if you have to strike an assailant, don't forget that you may well break or lose your phone in that situation. Okay, I'm going to disagree with David on this point. Yes, you might break your phone, but by the time your attacker's upon you, your first priority is escape. You can't use the phone if you're in a chokehold. It's better to get away and look for another means of getting help. You probably won't have the presence of mind to drop or put the phone down during an attack anyway. But yes, you might render the phone inoperable if you hit someone with it. Here's what Julie Green had to say on this issue. I would only use my cell phone as a force multiplier if I had it handy and there was nothing else available as one of the layers of personal safety. Generally, if I'm walking around in a quote-unquote marginal area, like a parking lot, I do not have my cell phone in my hand. I have my keys, which are the best force multiplier that I can carry. The best use of a cell phone is to call for help, and only if I had it in my hand and was surprised by an assault would I ever consider using it to hit someone. It's a good question. Would you risk breaking your cell phone to use it to hit someone harder than you would with your bare hand to break a nose or stun an attacker in order to get away? Back to David. Point 2. Even more worrisome is the fact that more and more, I see girls and women getting out of their cars at stores or restaurants or nightclubs with their cell phones already in their hands as they text or talk to someone. This happens individually or in groups. It's been my observation that these women frequently have no idea what's going on around them as they're engrossed in whatever text or Facebook update or whatever it is they're focusing on. I cannot tell you how many times I've walked up to someone within striking distance to see these women before they even looked up or became aware of me. They've also been known to walk into things or trip over items that they never saw. Although it may be true that a phone in the hand is a potential force multiplier, I am more concerned with any advice to keep a phone in your hand in the first place. Not only does it restrict you from being able to use that hand for anything at all except striking or texting, in my experience, a cell phone in the hand is tantamount to not paying attention to your surroundings, and I won't even get into the dangers of cell phone use while driving. And again, you know, I'm going to disagree with David here. You should always keep one hand free, but as I talked about in a previous episode, the fastest draw is to already have the defensive tool in your hand, and that includes cell phones. Now, I'm not saying that it should be used as a distraction, because that completely defeats the point. Always keep your situational awareness and keep your defensive tools at the ready. There's not much we can do except try to educate people, but there are still plenty of unaware people out there setting themselves up for an attack. In your hand is good. In your hand with your head down texting is bad. And here's what Julie Green had to say on the issue. I so agree. Perception of your surroundings is imperative. While in transit, whether driving or walking, it is best to be fully present and using every one of your senses to note what's going on around you. When talking or texting on a cell phone, your sense of sight and hearing for safety are basically disabled when you are focused on your conversation, not your surroundings. I've noticed that there's a general posture talking on your cell phone in public. The head is bent forward and the shoulders are pulled down and in, which creates a sense of privacy and smallness. Unfortunately, this is the posture for an easy target for a bad guy. To be safe, your head needs to be up and your shoulders need to be back. The best scenario for using your cell phone in public is to find a quiet and safe place to sit, then make your call or text. If you absolutely must walk and talk, keep your head up and roll your shoulders back, scanning the scene as you're moving. But this should not be the norm. Better to have your keys in your hand and using all of your senses to keep track of what's going on around you. But if I was assaulted and all I had in my hand was my cell phone, I would probably use it to hit someone who was assaulting me to get away to a safe place. If the assault and escape broke my phone, I would call for help using another person's cell phone or landline and get a new phone as soon as I could. And we're going to shift back to David here. Point 3. Something else I cannot stress enough. If you're scared enough in the first place to call for help from someone, do not call your parents or your boyfriend across town or whoever. Unless they live across the street from you, they cannot get there before the police can. And when the phone gets yanked out of your hand and you can't call anyone else, then your parents or boyfriends are the ones calling the police to try to get you help, possibly from out of town. This wastes valuable minutes while we try to figure out, secondhand, where you are and what's happening. If you need emergency help, call the police or the fire department. No one else. If you want to call your friends or family after that, you'll have plenty of time for that later. Okay. This never occurred to me, but I can see how some people might call a friend or a protector in a crisis instead of 911. As David says, call 911, not someone across town. If you receive a crisis call from a friend, a family member, or a child, tell them to hang up with you and call 911. If you can, get their location, but if it's taking too long, repeat that they should call 911, and then you hang up on them, and you call 911 as well. They will not want to let you go once he or she has you on the phone, so you'll need to end the call for them. Yes, you must hang up on them. They will be mad as all hell, but the shock of the hang-up might get them to make the call he or she should have made in the first place. You can deal with the anger once he or she survives the encounter. Seconds count, and direct contact with 911 is fastest. And Julie chimes in with, another good point. Always call 911 first if you fear for your safety or are in a dangerous situation. Make sure that your priority is to focus your energy on escaping or getting to a safe place. You alone are responsible for your safety. Reliance on your parents or boyfriend to come save you could get you into trouble. Changing your mindset to understand that you can save yourself is important. You have the ability and the power to protect yourself. Focus on the situation, call 911, and describe precisely what's going on. Then get to a safe place until the police come. Even if your parents or boyfriend are across the street, they still don't have what's necessary to deal with a violent situation, and you may be bringing them into danger. Call them only after you have escaped to somewhere safe. You don't want to be distracted by a telephone call when you're in the process of getting away from danger. You want to get to a secure location before you alert them to what's going on. Always call 911 first if you can, and bring the police before calling or engaging someone else. All right, and David closes with, I hope this isn't too long. Thanks for the great podcast. Well, Dave, that was a fantastic email with some great points. Thanks again for sending them in. It made for a great discussion.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Whew, for a little bit there, I was starting to feel schizophrenic. And for those that have stayed to the end, I'm going to give you a preview of sorts. I'm putting together a raffle to raise money for the show. The prize will be an autographed edition of Julie Green's book, Defy the Bad Guy. I'll post more information on my website, Facebook, and Twitter feed soon. So, yes, there is a Facebook page for Practical Defense and a Twitter feed as well. The Facebook page is facebook.com/practicaldefense, and the Twitter page is Practical Def. That's Practical D-E-F. Now, when it comes to Facebook, I get a handful of friend invites every week. Please do not be offended if I don't add you. I try to keep my friend status for family and people I know in person, which is why I created the page dedicated to the show. And to be honest, I check the show's page far more often than I check my personal page anyway. So again, that is facebook.com/practicaldefense, and for Twitter, it's practicaldef. You can also find links to those sites on my homepage. As always, don't forget that we have a 20% discount on subscriptions to Taekwondo Times magazine. Just enter our exclusive promo code of PRACDEF01 at checkout. The subscription to the print edition of the magazines include digital copies as well. You can find a promo code and a link in the show notes. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.